Helen Farmer with you, and it's I on Education. We were talking about getting help for your help, navigating the world of nannies, governesses, and even a whole world of chefs and masseuses with Lindsay Kilbane of the Mama Consultancy. She was taking your questions too. And not one, but two educators joining us as we talked about building resilience. How can we help our children lean into failure and overcome those little and big bumps in the road?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
Wonderful to have you with us and wonderful to introduce you to our next guest of the hour. Lindsay Kilbane is from the Mama Consultancy. She's a really experienced British governess with 15-year career working as a nanny, a governess, head nanny roles for really prominent families all over the world. She's also a qualified sleep trainer. Help me with my children's jet lag, Lindsay, and can help out with everything from children nutrition, wellness, ADHD, NLP for kids as well. And we can help out with any issues you might be having with your helper. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Helen, for having me.
My pleasure. I've already had a number of messages on social media, but the text lines are open too on 4001. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your journey from working as a governess, you know, maybe demystifying this kind of Mary Poppins persona a little bit, to, of course, founding your business, you know, in terms of what you felt was missing? Where did it begin?
So I have always had a passion to work with children in whatever capacity that may be. I also love to travel. So I started nannying in the UK and worked my way up to be working for very prominent families across the globe. I have been in the UAE now for 5 years, and it was here that I really saw a huge gap in the training and the quality of the nannies that we kind of have here. And that led me to really want to make a change, because it's heartbreaking when I see children being raised or not being raised, you know, with a phone instead of a quality nanny. And so I started the Mama Consultancy. I specialize in really British governesses and British staff, but I am creating a training for our everyday nannies to really make that impact.
I think it's a very difficult one in some ways, because when we're looking to have home help, we often talk about having a nanny, but it's a bit of a misnomer, because a lot of these women simply haven't had the education, the training, the background in order for that to be a kind of official job title, because really they're wearing an awful lot of hats. Or there's the hope and expectation of kind of helping running the home and keeping things clean and the laundry and the logistics. But then also the childcare, which is a completely different discipline and an area of expertise. Is that something that you feel like people have quite unrealistic expectations about?
Absolutely, because we are asking them to do multiple jobs. Mm. So, you know, if we're in the UK, for example, we would have a housekeeper who's dedicated to the housekeeping. We would have a nanny who's dedicated just to the children and their well-being. We might have private tutors. We might have a governess who
can
work on...
This is another world you're talking about, Lindsay.
It is really for some people. But, you know... Some, you know, we come to the UAE and everything is, you know, so available and, oh, let's get a nanny. But what does that really mean to let's get a nanny? We need to have realistic expectations when we are hiring staff, and we need to put in the time to train them.
And I think that's a big gap for a lot of people.
Yes.
It's knowing which questions to ask, you know, obviously having that personality match, but saying, you know, these are your roles and responsibilities, and here, this is how we can support you in getting to where you know, you might want to be. Can we talk about some of the common challenges that families face here when, because let's be honest, I mean, I didn't have a nanny growing up. I had my grannies living 3 miles down the road who would help out when my mum went back to work. And, you know, you come to the UAE and their family support isn't in place. And we were talking yesterday about maternity and paternity leave and, you know, going back to work after, you know, 45, 60 days and effectively handing your baby over to someone that you maybe don't know that well. It's hugely emotive.
Yes.
I remember, so our nanny Loretta, who... anyone who follows me on social media, I shout about whenever I can because she's amazing, has been with us for coming up to 10 years. And she joined us when I was pregnant with my first. And it was the right thing at the right time. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. She was working for an absolutely horrible family before us, like real, you know, disgusting human beings, and was treated appallingly. She ended up coming to us because her sister was working with friends of ours, and it was a bit earlier than we were anticipating, but she joined the family. And about maybe 2 weeks after I gave birth, my husband said, oh, you know, let's go out round the corner for a bite to eat and let's leave a little one with Loretta. And we went out and he was like, oh, you know, wasn't that amazing? You know, she's helping with the bottles and the cleaning and the logistics. And isn't life just so easy and uncomplicated with help? I think I burst out crying. I was like, yes, you know, the help is amazing. But I was already thinking about leaving this tiny bundle with someone that I didn't know very well and already feeling quite jealous of that mm-hmm. relationship and that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And this is someone that I really liked and had known for quite some time.
Incredibly normal.
Yeah. Is that something that you have people coming to you with as well?
All the time in my own career, and I see it, you know, from my clients and everybody. One of the big issues that come up is my child prefers the nanny over me. Which is, of course, isn't true. Everybody has their own role, and you cannot replace the role of a mum or a dad. It's impossible. But take it as a good sign if your child is, you know, attached to them, if it's in a healthy way, that clearly they are being well looked after, they're being loved, and very, very normal to worry. And also giving your child to somebody else, whether it's a newborn, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, and any
different
age,
challenges at different ages
is a challenge.
I think the distinction that really helped for me is that, you know, she is their friend, mm-hmm. but you are their mum.
Yeah.
We've had a message here from Fatia saying, shout out to our helper, Samira. She is the best. We've also had questions about working with our helpers, which I think is a really interesting point. Now, I want to hear from Lauren saying, our nanny is amazing, in capitals, almost too helpful. We've got a 10-year-old and 12-year-old boys, and like most, they're prone to laziness. They do have chores, but rarely complete them because she gets there first. Any tips? Good question.
Again, very common. I've had this in households that I worked in. And it's super frustrating because you're trying to teach the children and the nanny is being far too helpful. So that is about training your nanny, sitting with your nanny and explaining, I know that you want to do it. I know that maybe you feel bad. Maybe you think I won't think you're doing your job properly.
Yeah, if this isn't done, we will not think of it as being a reflection on you, your abilities, your work.
Okay. But this is now part of your job, part of your new task list, daily task list. Do not pick up the laundry, okay? I just want you to start with, do not pick up the children's laundry from the floor. And then you'll have to keep checking in with your helpers. You do, because it can quickly go back to how it was before.
I like this. So an absence on the to-do list.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Message is saying, what's the difference between a governess and a nanny? Great distinction to make. Can you explain that a little bit?
So depending actually on which country you're in, but I would say here, a nanny is very different to what we would call a nanny in the UK. A nanny here is, you know, kind of very hands-on, does everything from nursery duties, so, you know, changing the children, bathing the children, taking care of their laundry, being very, very hands-on. And then you have a governess who really focuses on teaching boundaries, being the disciplinarian, education. They can be academically focused, so many different things. And they can also take on many different hats, like party planning, managing the wardrobe, running errands.
Managing the wardrobe?
Yes, one of my favourites.
Sign me up. Whose wardrobe's getting managed? The kids or the adults?
The children.
Oh, devastated. Managing, I mean, that is...
Yeah.
We're talking Sunday Times rich list, surely, for a lot of
people. I don't know. I mean, I plan to teach these skills to in my nanny course, because I think, why not? You know, these small things really make the difference to a household. Imagine if your nanny took that off your plate.
What's the incentive? I mean, obviously for a nanny, if they do undertake some of these, you know, trainings, are we ultimately looking at getting them paid more, I hope?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely working to increase their skill set, which will then ripple. It's a ripple effect, okay? Because then the family feel the value, mm-hmm. and the nanny's own family feel the value, because ultimately they are working here for their families back home, right? And if we're upskilling them, they are also going to benefit.
What would you say to anyone that might have recently moved here, or has lived here for a while, the circumstances have changed, and you had a baby, and they're feeling guilty about having help? Because I think that's something a lot of people struggle with. And I still feel a bit guilty when I go back to the UK and, you know, talk about, you know, the help that Loretta offers us as a family. Mm-hmm. Any advice there? People who've come here and thought, I'm not going to do that, that's not for me, and then go, actually, logistically, this is something that we do really need, mm-hmm. but I don't feel comfortable mm-hmm. about it.
I would say that, you know, some of the most prominent people in the world have nannies, whether they work or not. So there is nothing to be ashamed of. And yes, it is different when you live here in the UAE because you don't have a network. You don't have any, you arrive on your own. Mm-hmm. You don't have friends, you don't have family, you don't have acquaintances. So why would you not employ somebody who you can lean on?
The best bit of advice I had, and I was feeling quite guilty, was, and it's funny because I think about it quite a lot, I get home from work normally about 6 o'clock. And if I'm then thinking about, okay, now I need to empty and reload the dishwasher, got to bring in that laundry, I've got to do the floor. I have to say, floors and ironing, I hate, but these are all things that can take me away from my children. Mm-hmm. And whether they are teeny tiny babies or my kids are 7 and 9 now and I feel like you're needing me more emotionally than physically, or indeed teens and the homework and the academic side and the emotional support there. If you're having to do tasks that take you away from connecting and being with your children, that's how I reconciled it. Mm-hmm. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah, of course. And it's invaluable time with your children spent enjoying them and working on their problems and your relationship with them.
I got home last night and I said, we've got some lovely messages giving shout outs for nannies. And one saying, we're on holiday for 10 days. Our son gave our lovely nanny the biggest, longest hug when he saw her again. We are so grateful for her care. Thank you, Florence. Well, I got home last night and Loretta had was putting away some dishes and my seven-year-old was like, Mummy, do you want to do some Lego? And I was like, yeah, I always want to do Lego. So we built a children's hospital and it was, honestly, that was an hour of sitting on the floor with her that I wouldn't have been able to do. And it was probably the highlight of my week, sitting there making little hospital beds with my seven-year-old instead of thinking about, oh God, the dog's made a mess of the floor again. We've been having some lovely messages, people giving shout outs to their home help. Jen saying, just want to say, whenever I see posts on Facebook whinging about nannies, I breathe a sigh of relief that we found Andrea the best thing in our lives. So I did a post about our nanny Loretta a few months ago, just saying, we basically need to celebrate our village. You know, it would be really, really insincere and misleading. Because I get a lot of people saying, oh, you've got job and 2 kids and how do you manage it? And I'm like, the first one say, it's Loretta. It's obviously, I couldn't do what I do without her. So I put messages out saying, maybe we should have a nanny night out. And it's happening. It's sold out already, 8th of June. So next week, it's the Dine and Shine night organised by Helply. I'm going to be there kind of hosting a little bit. So nannies, and the only rule is no employers allowed, getting dressed up, coming along, having a night out, games being celebrated. So hopefully it's the first of many. Lindsay, let's go to the text line. A lot of people, questions and concerns. Sophie saying, actually, do you know what? Let's go to the anonymous one, because I think this is something I've seen recently, saying we hadn't realised our helper's English was so poor until she moved in. I think she'd practiced a lot for the interview. She's lovely with the kids, does a good job, but explaining everything is really time consuming and she can't help with things like booking Ubers. I'm at a bit of a loss of what to do.
Okay. So if you think she's worth keeping, then I would suggest investing 100%. It's very difficult to find somebody who's really good and who you trust and who's good with the children. So I would say invest. But it does take time. Mm-hmm. Be okay. Realistic.
Also, a message here. I mentioned before, your experience when it comes to working with children who might have additional needs. Anonymous message saying, our son has ADHD and ASD and finds it hard to communicate sometimes, doesn't make eye contact, etc. Our last nanny found him rude, quote unquote, which felt unfair. How best to share his ways and needs when looking again for help?
Mm-hmm. You need to find a nanny that has experience and training with these kinds of things, because the impact of that child being called rude, well, he could carry that then for the rest of his life. So really it's down to you. You need to find somebody who maybe has been a shadow teacher in school or has done training around special needs, or you can invest in somebody that you really like.
Mm-hmm. And get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the discipline piece, because we hear it time and time again, kids need routine, they need structure, they need consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think often our kids, definitely not talking about mine, totally talking about mine, can see nanny as being a bit of a soft touch. And I wondered, as parents, how can we communicate our values, what we'd like to be, communicated and put in place, even when we're not there?
Mm-hmm. You need to empower your nanny, give her permission to discipline the children. Now, we are, our nannies are usually from, you know, different countries, and maybe they're culturally, they don't discipline the children, or that discipline is totally different to ours. So you need to be very, very clear on what your values are as a family. I find that creating a nanny handbook is super important and can be really powerful. They can always refer back to it. Check-ins. So you can do monthly check-ins. I wouldn't say any more frequent than that. Just keep touching base with your nanny. It's about training. It's about empowering her. You can say no, okay? Mm-hmm. And you can say, do you know what? You're going to say no to the sweet, and he's going to come back and say to you, oh, and he's going to, maybe he'll cry. You know your child. You know what they're going to do, the whole routine. And you can say to her, still say no, okay? Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, with the training, they get better at these things.
I think a lot of that comes down to that personality piece as well.
Yes. Your connection with your nanny and your, yeah, or your helper.
Okay. Lindsay with us today. If you've got any questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch from the Mama Consultancy. Can I ask you about trends? Because we are seeing more mannies being hired, butlers. Can you tell us a little bit about what your, you know, your kind of offering is and what you're seeing in this space as well, especially amongst those kind of ultra high net worth families?
Of course. So I have clients come to me with all kinds of asks. So butlers, trained chefs, private masseuses, house managers, butlers. House manager can change your life. Really can.
It was the masseuse thing that caught my eye.
Okay, masseuse, we can get those as well.
can you imagine?
Arabic speaking staff. Arabic speaking house managers or Arabic speaking nannies, very rare to find, but with the nannies, but super powerful, especially if you are a family that speaks Arabic. Amazing. Mannies, yes. Now that we have more expats joining this region, the need for male nannies or governors, let's call them, is increasing. Yes.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Can I ask, I just want to come back to the masseuse thing. No, because we often play this kind of game of like, if you know, if you could have any kind of luxury in your life, what would it be? And I've got friends who be like, oh my goodness, if I could get like a, you know, have my hair blow dried every morning, or if I could have a, you know, a masseuse to have like a, you know, like with that, I mean, that is next level kind of luxury. So presumably people would have like an at-home spa area where they would go for their,
yes.
Oh my gosh, yes. Who are these people? Do they want to adopt me? I know I'm in my early 40s, but I do feel like I would be delighted.
You never know.
Mum and Dad, Babs and Dave wouldn't mind a bit. So in terms of these, I guess they're not trends for a lot of people. A lot of people will have, you know, private chefs. And are those people that might be salaried and attached to one family, or would they effectively kind of freelance and go between families? How does it work as a gig economy versus a full-time role?
So you hire them as a full-time member of your team. They can usually, one principal is enough, one household is enough to be attached to. So that's really how it works.
Message here from Petra saying, what does a house manager do?
Okay. They run the house. So from paying bills to managing your staff, whoever's in your house working, car maintenance, maintenance of the villa.
Life admin.
Life admin. If you have an event, they can plan it for you. Florist. It's kind of a lot of PA duties, but also managing everything that goes on inside the house.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. In your experience, Lindsay, what's been the biggest kind of staff quota that you've experienced in one household where you're like, okay, this is basically a football team to get this family around the world and out the door?
So a football team is quite a small team, actually.
What?
I know that not necessarily in this country, in other Arab countries, you're looking at hundreds of staff. But the property is huge. You know, you do need a lot of staff to run in large properties.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is just an insight into another world. Sophie's saying, first world problem, I know, but we have two helpers, four kids, three dogs, two working parents, but they don't seem to like each other. Have tried sitting down, talking about their roles and responsibilities, how they both complement each other, but it seems a bit competitive about who's in charge. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I kind of object to the first world problem thing because, you know, we are living in a first world. We're in a, you know, a very privileged part of the world where situations might come up that we would never have occurred to us in our home countries. But when you do have someone effectively working for you in the home, these things can come up. So Sophie, there's absolutely no need to, you know, put that disclaimer in. Has this come up for you? And I'm sure it has. And what can tend to help?
Yes, this comes up so often. If there's more than one member of staff in the same kind of realm, you're going to get this issue. So Two options. I would say, because you've already spoken to them, sat them down, tried to implement boundaries, you could separate the jobs and give them different job titles. Like, okay, you two, this one, you know, nanny A will look after this child and the dog, and the other nanny will look after the other children.
Okay.
So you could split their jobs, so effectively two different job titles. Or if it doesn't improve, I do not agree with toxic environments inside households, because it's gross, mm-hmm. and it spills into the children's lives.
I don't think, you know, our home should be our sanctuary.
Your home should be your home.
So Sophie, if you're coming home and you're dreading an atmosphere, mm-hmm. you think the kids are picking up on it,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Then one nanny has to go. Sorry.
Oh, brutal. But speaking from years of experience,
yes.
Lindsay, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. For anyone that wants to find out more, and you mentioned before about, you know, looking to recruit as well, big part of it, mm-hmm. training nannies, but mm-hmm. also matching governesses, nannies, chefs, drivers and more. What's the best way of people getting in touch with you?
So you can follow the business Instagram, which is at the Mama Consultancy, or you can find me on Instagram at Lindsay Kilbane.
There you go. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Really important. It's something we don't talk about a lot, despite it being a huge part of our mm-hmm. lives in terms of, you know, emotional and practicality. So let's celebrate those right-hand men and women. And of course, there is help on hand if you do need it.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
And joining us from Ranches Primary, Amy Carroll is with us today, the Vice Principal. She's also a mum of two, which I think is really important, because we talk a lot about parenting and education and even things like, I don't know, children's nutrition. And then I speak to an expert and I'm like, do you have kids? You know, I love this idea of feeding, you know, putting broccoli in the shape of a tree, but have you tried it? So I think it's really important that you're here with a parenting hat on as well as an educator hat. How are you, Amy?
I'm really good, thank you, Helen. How are you today?
I'm really well. I find this topic really fascinating. We're talking about building resilience, fostering resilience in our children. And I think that word needs a bit of a makeover, to be honest, because we talk about being resilient and I immediately think of... It's a horrible, I think of being like it being quite a hard thing and, you know, these resilient little kind of robot children. And that's not really what we're talking about. What does it mean to you?
Yeah, I suppose resilience really, it's about that element of bouncing back, about learning from a mistake, being able to grow, being committed, being persistent. You know, I think often when we think of resilience, it's about a big trauma, but actually for a child, it can be, you know, yesterday they weren't able to do something and today they can. So I think it can be small and it can be big, but really it's about that element of bouncing back and learning.
It is quite misunderstood. And it's something that I think as a parent, we have a big responsibility to be talking about and fostering. And I'm not saying we should write children. This weekend, we're going to teach you how to be resilient. But the things that we can weave into our day-to-day, which I want to get your take on as well, but also the role of the school. Can we talk about maybe some of the key components that should be instilled, especially from that early age? You know, you go from that foundation, and it's called foundation for a reason. What do you think we should be highlighting on today's show?
Yeah, I think if we look at resilience, so for example, at Ranches Primary School, it's embedded into our curriculum. So one of our core values is resilience, and we teach it to the children through the character of commitment. And we have a progression curriculum that we look at. So from FS, the children are looking at engagement. You know, finishing off a task for a three-year-old is huge. You know, I look at my daughter Fia and her being able to complete a task. That's a really big deal to her. But then as we go further up the school, then it's their attitudes, it's their behaviour, you know, those opportunities that they have to show resilience. So I think it varies from age, but you can start it at a really young age. In schools then, you know, while it's in our curriculum, there's also lots of opportunities where we celebrate progress. It's not just about the final product. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing with resilience is it is about the journey. It's about the journey. It's about the learning and celebrating those little milestones is really, really important.
I think it's important for adults as well. I think we often forget that kind of practice makes perfect, which is what, you know, I was taught. And now I'm trying to say, no, practice makes progress. So those everyday little disappointments, those kind of so-called failures, that's what I want to talk about next. You know, maybe reframing that word failure.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
And joining us from Ranches Primary today, we've got Amy Carroll, the Vice Principal. We've had a message for you saying to Ms. Carroll, please say hi on the radio to Layla. She's been in the school since FS2 and is graduating next year from RPS. Applied for head girl next year and she's obsessed with the school. Proud mum there.
Layla, I'm so happy to hear that she is a fantastic student in our school.
Feeling the love. We're talking about building resilience today and I think we've got a couple of messages that may help us kind of expand on the topic if you don't mind. Message here from Edie saying, my son is a very, in capitals, sore loser. He's 7, will drop out of races and cry if he sees he won't win, always tries to cheat in games, etc. Not going to lie, it's exhausting. Would welcome some advice before his friends stop playing with him. You are so not alone in this.
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm a really sore loser myself. You know, a game of Uno at home and I'm really competitive.
Monopoly's banned in our household.
I can imagine, you know. So I think really it's providing opportunities for children to experience what winning and losing is. And for me, I think parents having opportunities with their children to almost take part in like low stakes winning or losing. So that might be games at home to start off with. Or it could be looking at, for example, when the children are upset about losing, delving into it a bit more and really validating their feelings. See, what is it they're upset about? Is it that they're disappointed in themselves? If they're playing football, is it that they've left the team down? Or is it that actually as parents, they really want to prove to us, you know, that they're really great at something? So I think kind of validating, feel the feels, I always say, listen to your child. And rather than saying, okay, next time you're going to win, actually, let's look at
fixing the game so they do win.
Oh my goodness. Don't, you know, and myself and my husband sometimes battle with this one. Just let the children win. But I think it's really important to experience. Life is amazing, but it's not all rainbows and sunshine all the time. I'm not going to win that game of Uno every time I play it. And it's really important for our children, I think, if we're going into it to say, okay, if we're talking to my children, Rian and Fia, someone's going to win this game and someone's going to lose. So it's very clear to them, actually, one person is going to be the winner. But also, I think celebrating the game in the enjoyment that they've had in the game. And actually, it's about participating a lot of the time. So, yeah, I think there's a couple of things. For that one, I'd talk to her child and just delve into that element of losing. What is it that they're really disappointed
and
about?
And also doing it lots. So,
exactly.
So there's more chances of winning. There's more chances of losing. So
yeah,
it doesn't maybe hit so hard.
Definitely. Lots of exposure as well is really, really good.
And also maybe when we lose as parents.
Yes.
Us being okay with it too?
100%.
Can you imagine if you were like, well,
this is it.
Smash the board up.
Yeah. I think, you know, I've always said as parents, you know, our children, they really take the good, the bad and the ugly from us. So I think as parents, being really good role models is really important. But also knowing, and our children knowing that we love them unconditionally. So even if they have lost a game, do you know what? I can see that you're really upset. I know you really wanted to win that game, but how can we learn from this and move on? So I think that's another really important conversation to have with children.
What about so-called failure or disappointment in the classroom? And I'm thinking, you know, if a piece of work comes back that they've worked really hard on and it's, you know, it's all marked up. And I know teachers do it in a lot much nicer way than they did certainly when I was growing up. And you see their little face fall. How do you navigate that at Ranches?
And I think it can be really, really challenging because I think if we look at kind of, I suppose, parenting styles, first of all, you know, we're seeing a lot of snowplowing of parents where...
For anyone that's not familiar, because I love this term. I don't love the idea, but I love the term. Go on.
It's about, you know, removing every obstacle along the way, not letting your child have any failure or disappointment. So then when they come across it, they've never experienced it before and they don't have those coping strategies that they need. But if we look at kind of the coach approach, it's more kind of helping them along the way, kind of guiding them with questions. So often, you know, a parent might say, you know, a child comes home from school, you know, I was really disappointed with this piece of work today. I worked really hard on it. Right, I'm going to message your teacher. I'm going into that principal. You know, their problem often becomes our problem as parents. Mm-hmm. And that's the protective mama bear coming out in us. However, I think actually having the conversation, say, okay, giving them the skills, say, what can we do about this? Do you want to talk to your teacher tomorrow? Do you want me to help you have this conversation? Did the teacher give any constructive feedback? How could we improve and get better next time? I think can be really helpful conversations to have.
Joining us in studio today from Ranches Primary, Vice Principal Amy Carroll. And, you know, we've spoken on the past in our education about that pastoral care and the role of that. And we've had a message which I think really speaks to it, because it's not just about the academics at
Absolutely
school. You
not.
Know, you're there navigating that social side. A message saying, my 9-year-old daughter is struggling with her friendship group and I'm feeling out of my depth. Has been in a close group with 3 girls for about a year and suddenly feels like she isn't wanted or isn't involved. She got upset in school last week. Teacher spoke to them, but she seems quite down, which is out of character. I want to help, but I don't want to interfere. I understand this will happen and it will build resilience. I'm hoping it passes, but do you have any top tips on navigating this? Can I just say, anonymous listener, I have a 9-year-old. Stuff gets real at 9.
It really, particularly with girls, Helen, we see it so much. And for example, at Ranches, we have a couple of our classes are mixing up ahead of next year, and the friendship issues that some parents are really, really worried about. And I think what we often see at school is, you know, as teachers or educators, we've dealt with it. Okay, you know, we're moving on. But then children go home and share so much more. Or at the time, maybe they'd put on a brave face. So for that mum, reach out to the school, because they will have resources to help. At Ranches Primary School, we have a student wellbeing advisor. So for any children who are struggling with their friendships, you might do a lunch club or provide opportunities for really to get their feelings out there. Some great resources out there right now. So I would say to that mum, amazing that, you know, you're trying to navigate it. And I suppose take a step back, because we're not always going to be there for our children. But I think it's really important for the school to realise, I suppose, how much it is impacting her daughter, because in school, she might be putting on a front, you know, with her friends and trying to get through the day. So I would say reach out to the school, because the school will want to do their very best
and
to help.
And you need the whole picture as well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You need to understand if something's going on, you know, if work starts to suffer or you start to get that school refusal. But from a parent's point of view, I mean, I've been there a few times, that idea of I don't want to go to school, I'm feeling left out. It's heartbreaking, because you do want to go in as a slow power parent. I'm like, well, let me get in there
and I'll, and it's and I think it's trying to strike, it's really getting that balance right, because there's times where we do need that protective mom bear or dad bear to come out, and we need to make sure that the people who are educating are really aware of the impact it's having on their well-being at home. But then there's other times where we're trying to judge, say, okay, I think she can navigate this by herself. But I think keeping the communication, it's key to everything, Helen.
It is between parent and teacher, but also parent to child.
Absolutely.
Because this, you know, it's lovely that she's come to you and is able to be so open about what
Amazing.
She's going through. But yes, I'm sending you a massive hug as a fellow parent of a 9-year-old daughter.
It's not easy.
Phoebe, for listening, I love you, but I'm not looking forward to the teen years. Amy, we've run out of time. Thank you so, so much for coming in. It was an absolute pleasure to meet you in person. Ranches Primary School, of course, there in, clues in the name, Raven Ranches, Vice Principal. And we were just saying off air that the lovely Adam, the OT, is there for 2 days a week. You're incredibly lucky. He is a brilliant, brilliant occupational therapist. For anyone who wants to find out more about the school, Amy, what's the best way of getting in touch, or resources, websites?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got our website, we've got our Instagram, but the best thing is come into the school. I always say to parents, get a feel, come on in. You'll feel it. That maternal instinct will come out and you'll get a gut feeling. So my biggest advice, come in for a tour to see us. That would be amazing. But Helen, thank you so much for having me today.
My pleasure.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
Some really interesting questions, or should I say concerns, coming in about building resilience in our children. We're bringing in the best in the business today. Claire Turnbull is here, principal at Royal Grammar School Guildford here in Dubai. I'm so happy to have you in the studio. It's been far too long, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Helen. It's wonderful to be here.
We're going to be saying a sad farewell to you later in the show and explaining the next plan for RGS. Can we talk a little bit about the pillars, which we have discussed before, in terms of curriculum, but also pastoral and also parental character development of our children? Can you explain a little bit more about what we mean by that, and how, as a school, you really kind of look to foster that child's character development?
Yeah, I think it's multifaceted. We really look, when you're looking at holistic education, at what is going to make sure that our young people are strong. And I don't mean happy jazz hands strong.
The kind of toxic positivity strong.
Absolutely. We used to say we wanted to teach our children to be happy. And I think that's wrong. We want to teach our children to be content. And it's a subtle difference, isn't it? But it's a really important one. And to know that character education allows them to know themselves. Mm-hmm. And truly know themselves, not with, again, the big brash, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to be the first ever astronaut from my country. Not that sort of thing. I mean, I know what makes me happy. I also know what makes me sad. Mm-hmm. I know what allows me to re-energise. And to do that, we have to be brave. So character education is about encouraging our young people to be courageous.
And that actually, when we think about, you know, being those primary years, this is where it all actually comes into place. We know foundation stage is called foundation for a reason. But, you know, as my children are getting older, we spoke recently about dangers of social media, about exploitation, you know, explicit images and whatnot. But it is this time, those foundation years, the primary years, where that self-reliance, that self-belief, that self-knowledge really is built and fostered for good reason. So when it comes to someone asking them to, you know, send them a picture, or someone compromising their values, or someone, you know, encouraging them to take risky, you know, risks beyond a typical risky behavior teenage thing, they have the conviction to say no, or that's not right for me, I'm not going to compromise myself. It's a big ask, though.
It's a huge ask. It's about lines in the sand. That's an image we often use, where is your line in the sand as a 3-year-old, that 4-year-old, that actually I'm going to stand up for my friend because that's not okay. Mm-hmm. But then it's giving children language. How many of us as teenagers were really brave enough to go, you know what, I don't agree with you on that, and I'm going to go. It's very difficult socially to do that, but it's very easy to give our young people ways out to be able to say, my courage is that I'm going to say, I'm really sorry, I've got to go because I can see so-and-so over there. Or giving them scripts to deal
techniques
as they then learn the courage. And then they will say, once they're comfortable and know they've done that a few times, they'll turn around and say, Helen, I don't like that. I don't want to be with you right now.
Or I don't agree with what you're saying.
Exactly.
Or I don't, you know, gossip or whatever it might be.
Indeed.
But I think that's, I love that as a parent, because I think everyone listening today, if they're grown up, you know, it's very easy to get, you know, swept along with, you know, gossip, toxicity, whatever it might be, because we don't want to be isolated. We don't want to be
that one,
you know, evolutionary speaking, we don't want to be pushed out of the tribe, the herd, you know, and be picked off by a lion. And then in the school situation, you don't want to be isolated as, you know, weird or different or, you know, just other, which I think everyone feels quite other, whether we admit it or not.
But I think that's what's important. We are all other, aren't we? And that's where, if in a school or in family, we celebrate our uniqueness truly, rather than pacifying it and just doing a nod to it because it's politically correct. But actually, that is what makes us interesting as humans. If we are carbon copies of each other, life would be tremendously boring and friendships would be impoverished.
But isn't that the lovely thing, I think, to my mind? And I say this as someone who grew up in, you know, a rural village in Northumberland where everyone looked like me, really. Mm. Everyone's having the same thing for lunch. You know, this idea of, you know, diversity here in the UAE is so powerful, so important, and something to be really celebrated. But having that idea of I am different, and that's great, is so, so important. Claire Turnbull's with us today, the principal from Royal Grammar School Guildford, Dubai. We're talking about building resilience, fostering the sense of self. And Alex has reached out with a really lovely question, and something I think a lot of parents will identify with, Claire, saying, we have a gorgeous son who's 5, a very sensitive boy, generally doing well, making in school, making friends, keeping up. But since he's been very small, he's had a huge fear of failure. Now it's starting to impact him more. Won't ride a bike in case he doesn't do it properly. Battle to read his school book every time because I might not do it right. Any practical ideas to try and move past this? How do you feel about failure, Claire?
Failure is so important, isn't it? But it's tough.
Very.
And you know what I would say to that wonderful mummy or daddy is, how often are we modelling failure as adults? Because so many of the amazing parents I talk to and teachers, they want to be the best for their children. And so we don't model failure ourselves. We say it's great to fail. You learn through failure.
But not
don't
me.
Don't worry. But I'm going to have my crisis in private in the bathroom because I don't want to show you. I think it's essential that we, you know, if it is about the bike, for example, that actually we show our young people how we learned. You know, we sit on with the young person and we do it together. Mm-hmm. And then when you fall off together, you fall off together and it's fine. And we've got up. It's not lonely. Because mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that's a challenge for our young people when they fail and feel alone. Whereas because we don't model it, you know, I heard before that wonderful game, you know, analogy of losing the games. Actually, I think it's right and it's important that us as adults, we show our frustration. Frustration's healthy. Mm-hmm. It's what we do with that frustration. It's how we show that frustration is what we need to model.
And bouncing back from that frustration.
Totally.
But there are little things, you know, like I'm just trying to think of examples that I try and do with my kids. So I had a lovely hour playing Lego with my daughter last night when I got home from work. And if you're building like a set as opposed to just kind of free building, quite often I do get things wrong because I've got my reading glasses on or, you know, whatever. And it's quite useful just to be like, oh, right, we'll have to unpick this and start again. Or
exactly.
I pride myself on reversing around a corner, but I'm terrible at reverse parking. So I quite often be like, oh, I have to start this again. You know, all these little things of, because we like the idea of being, you know, perfect and infallible parents and, you know, being the best for them. But maybe that's not that helpful.
Well, and I really think it isn't, because it becomes a theoretical thing rather than something that is, you know, we talk a lot about role modelling and we need to do this. We've had times at school where we've actually consciously made a decision to role model mistakes.
What did that look like?
Well, it can be, again, quite stressful for the teachers because, you know, a teacher will perhaps message me or the assistant and say ahead and say, please don't panic. I do know what I'm doing, really, but I need to model this. You know, modelling writing. And
because kids love doing that. That's in the wrong place.
Absolutely.
You've spelt that one the wrong way.
Absolutely. And again, it's having that conversation of thank you for telling me, but not in a nasty way.
And for the last time, Claire Turnbull is the principal at Royal Grammar School, Guildford, Dubai, and you're leaving for exotic climes at the end of term. I think we first met about 4 years ago, and I remember having a lovely evening with you around COVID times, and it's been fantastic to have you part of the Dubai education scene, Claire. It really, really has. What have your own highlights been for the last few years?
Oh, gosh, I've loved it. I wouldn't be going if I wasn't a little bit poorly and needed to sort that out. But what an opportunity to have the Royal Grammar School, Cognita, to come to a new area for both Cognita and the Royal Grammar School to set up a school. And it's all been about community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I walk the corridors now and I see the children loving learning, excited, and the place is buzzing, and I go down and we've got the parent cafe where everybody's getting on and talking and wanting to be part of the school. That has to be one of the best feelings. I'm not going to lie, being awarded very good in our first ever KHDA inspection last term, the first ever new school to get that rating. That was probably the cherry on the icing on the cake, but it's the community that is the thing I look back and I'm going to miss tremendously.
Sure. And what an amazing accomplishment. Yes, academically, but as you say, emotion as well. You know, that school becomes such a linchpin in the community in that area. And you so, so well loved by parents and pupils alike. So what a legacy. Thank you for all of your hard work and everything everything you've contributed, not just the school in particular, but to the education conversation here in the UAE, Claire. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you, Helen. And it's been an honour. What a place to be. What a vibrant and exciting place. And RGS is going to go from strength to strength. Our new principal, Scott Bryan, is joining in August. And I can't wait to watch it, even if it's from a distance.
I'll get him in from a grilling. And then make sure you pop into Dubai next time you can. We'd love to see you.
I will do.
Claire Turnbull, heading off to... Oh, I have to say, it's been a very, very, very wonderful journey to see that school unfold, and we've got high hopes for its future as well. Claire Turnbull, the principal at Royal Grammar School Guildford, Dubai. It's Afternoons with me, Helen Varma, signing off.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Varma.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.